2 weeks away. Ephesians chapter 4, the commandment, the text is as Exodus 20:15. You know the commandment, four simple words, thou shalt not steal. I almost pause and let you answer that because I'm afraid too many of y'all don't know what the next commandment is. So I'll provide it for you. Thou shalt not steal. But I remind you that the commandments of the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments, with the exception of one, are repeated not just in verbatim, but they are expanded upon in the New Testament. God takes them further in the New Testament, whether it's as we've seen in the Sermon on the Mount, Ephesians chapter 4, other places. It takes the commandment and it moves it from merely the negative restraint into the positive action. We'll see that especially today. This is especially true in Ephesians 4, where several of the commandments are repeated in this passage, but in a different form. You'll remember that Jesus would take the commandments of the Old Testament and move them further. And the passage here is key for our understanding as believers because it takes the restraint and it takes the change and the positive result. It takes those things and it couples it with the filling of the Holy Spirit. These things will not happen in our lives. You can restrain yourself. You can obey the Old Testament law in the strength of the flesh, but it won't be true holiness and it won't be true righteousness until Spirit-empowered transformation takes place in our hearts and we produce the fruits of righteousness. And so in this passage, we'll see our text this morning. It speaks clearly of this. The commandment, thou shalt not steal, someone has suggested, and after seeing some statistics and some things that I've observed this week, they say it may be the most broken commandment in our culture today. I read statistics from just a few years back. Every year, over 10 million acts of robbery take place in the United States alone. 10 million. Almost makes you afraid to walk outside, doesn't it? I'd be careful who I'm sitting next to in church, too. They may be reaching for some. Several years ago, I was on my way to Western Africa on a mission trip and had a layover in Paris, and so I wanted to see some of the sights, and I took the metro down into Paris, down into the city, and I was walking out of the metro and headed up the escalator, and they came over the loudspeaker, first in French and then in English, and they said, please be aware we've had a number of reports of pickpockets in the area. And I'm not lying, on that escalator, as soon as they said the word pickpockets, every man on that elevator's hand went to their hip, including mine. There's theft all around us, but it goes beyond those actions of theft. The IRS, speaking of theft, estimates... what? They estimate that $20 billion a year is unpaid because of underreporting of income. $40 billion a year is stolen from employers, not by shoplifters, not by thieves breaking in, but by their own employees. $40 billion a year. The damage from employees is 10 times more than that of actual crime. $350 billion a year is lost to business through the reporting of dishonest sick days by employees. I read statistics that said one-third of sick days were lied about, and that's the people that confess to it. So I suspect there's maybe even more, but it costs businesses $350 billion a year. So many more. It affects all of us. Most businesses report that goods and services are approximately 15% higher than they would be were stealing not so epidemic. That's how common it is in our culture. And I'm just talking about just the actual stealing. The Bible talks about a number of things. Romans connects this command with the command to love our neighbor. If you love your neighbor, you don't steal, you don't take from them. But what does the New Testament say about this? And I want you to see this text in Ephesians 4. Look at verse 28. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needs. There's a great story of a thief that was saved some years ago in a church. All he had ever done was steal. He'd never worked an honest day in his life. That's all he knew to do. And so the pastor was trying to disciple him and teach him. And he pointed him to this verse and he said, "Pastor, that's a hard verse. I don't know how to do anything else. All I know how to do is steal." And so he came to the pastor one day and he said, "Pastor, I've got it figured out. We've been misreading this verse. We've got the punctuation in the wrong place. It doesn't say, 'Let him that stole steal no more.' It says, 'Let him that stole steal. No more let him labor, working with his hands, the things that are good.'" Isn't it amazing how we'll, the mental gymnastics we will go to rationalize our sin? Look at this verse very quickly, and I want to break down just a couple of thoughts and then get to the final part, because that's where I want to focus this morning in the time that we have. First of all, the reality of stealing. He said, let him that stole. It is an action. The ways that the Bible describes that we steal, obviously robbery, it's the illegal taking by force. We understand that. But it's also stealing to use deceit, charging for work that's not been done, adding to expenses, false advertising, false claims, exaggerations, making promises you knowingly can't keep. Dishonest business measures. I preached this in the 8 o'clock service, and I had someone that's been involved in business for many, many years come up and share with me afterwards so many stories. He said, "I could tell you so many stories of dishonest practices in business." There's the great story of divers' weights. You know, Proverbs says, unequal weights and unequal measures are an abomination to the Lord. What is that? That's weighing things out. In their day, they didn't have people who come along and check and make sure that if you're purchasing 3 pounds of meat, that you're getting 3 pounds of meat. And there's people, I was at a gas station in town several months ago, and this truck pulled in next to me and it had this really unusual looking thing on the back. And this man went to each pump and was pumping a certain amount of gas. And I said, "What on earth are you doing?" He said, "I am testing." He said, "My job is to go to all the gas stations around." And he said, "I test to make sure that if you pay for a gallon of gas, you're getting a gallon of gas." And I said, "Man, I want to shake your hand, because I don't think about that kind of thing when I'm sitting there pumping my gas. I'm glad that there are people who make sure that we are seek to make sure that we have just measures. But there are those who would take advantage." There's a story years ago of a man that was working in a grocery store, and when they would keep the meat and the chicken in the cooler and the ice, and the lady came into the country store and she said, "You know, I'd like to buy a chicken. I'd like a 2 pound chicken." Well, he knew he only had one chicken left, and he reached in and he pulled it out and he laid it up on the scale, and it was she wanted 2 pounds. It was 1.5 pounds. She said, "I'm sorry. Do you have a 2 pound chicken?" So he took the chicken and he put it back down in and he stirred it around in a little bit, and he pulled that same chicken back out and he laid it up on the scale and he sort of laid his finger on the scale and it's exactly 2 pounds. She said, "That's wonderful. I'll take both of them." We laugh about that, but let me tell you, I could tell you a true story. Tell you a true story of a young man working in a grocery store who saw a deacon in the church that owned the grocery store do the same thing or do something very similar, except that the person who came through was of a different ethnicity. And when he laid the meat up on the scale, he laid his finger on the scale as well to charge her more, simply because her skin was darker than his. That's stealing. I don't care whether you're a deacon. I don't care whether I don't care what you are. That's robbery. Unjust measures. Cheating. Stealing information from others to use for your own good. Abuse of generosity. Destruction of other people's property. Do you know that the right to private property is based in this commandment? That a person has the right to own something without it being taken away from them? See, a lot of the things in our liberties and our freedoms are rooted in the Word of God. We're just not sure where to find it and where it is. Having affairs. The Bible calls that defrauding one another, marital affairs. Gambling. Oh, this is a popular one. Everybody's like, "Oh, it's just a little bit." I like what Dr. Adrian Rogers says about that. "The person who gambles and wins has the spirit of thievery. The person who gambles and loses has the spirit of thievery and the spirit of foolishness." I think that's a pretty good description. Taking advantage, Isaiah says, taking advantage of the poor is robbery. You see why I say that our culture is filled with it? There's so many of these ways that we could talk about. Defrauding, withholding what is due, especially to God. Do you know what the prophet said in the Old Testament? Will a man rob God? Yes, he'll rob God when he withholds from God what is due to God. And we can talk about a lot of things with tithes and offerings, but let me just suffice to say this. God's covenant of grace takes things much deeper than the law ever did. And when you hold back from giving tithes and offerings, that's not robbing the church, that's not robbing me, that is robbing God. God takes it very seriously. But then notice also, he says, here's the reason for stealing. Let him that stole, the next phrase, steal no more. The command to stop stealing means that the reason is wrong. It doesn't matter what reason there is for taking and stealing. And there's all sorts of justifications that can be made about it. Some do it out of a desire for possessions. It's just old-fashioned greed or envy. I want something, I see it, I take it. I'm going to have what I want. For some, it's disrespect of others or disrespect for the law. They just get a thrill out of breaking the law. Augustine, the great theologian of the early church, tells of a time when he, as a teenager, before he was converted, that he and some of his friends went to a neighbor and stole bushels of pears. And he said they got those pears and they took a few bites and then they threw them away. It really wasn't about what they were stealing. It was about the idea, the thrill of breaking. They just wanted to enjoy breaking the law. They have no respect for others, no respect for the property of others. Some do it out of a sense of privilege. They have a sense of entitlement. Just this week, as I was had already prepared much of this, was reading a man who was taking some biblical principles about stealing from your employer, and he was applying them in specific ways. And I really shouldn't be shocked anymore, but the Christians who were defending those actions by saying, well, if the boss or the business or the company treats me this way, then I deserve to take a little extra. They have a sense of entitlement. I deserve this. I have to put up with this. They don't treat me right. God doesn't put qualifications on his commands. This command says, let him that stole steal no more unless they feel like they got a justification. He says, let him that stole steal no more. Because the action is commanded to cease, the reason for it is wrong. There's also the, in that delusion of privilege, there's the idea that has changed. I like what one writer says, the biblical worldview in which our country was founded promotes diligence and work as the road to success. We have become a nation of people who believe that we should have that for which we have not worked. And so we take from others. It really boils down to a doubt of God's promise. When God gave this command to his people, he was saying, you don't steal. Why? Because I will be your provider. I will take care of you. I will meet your need. I will give you what you want. I will give what is needed in your life. Ron Mell says this, what God must be saying is this, I don't want you stealing because I'm your provider. I want you to understand and believe that I am the one to supply all your needs. Do you believe that God's the one who supplies our needs? I don't want you to have to scheme and manipulate and deceive to obtain things. I don't want you to feel responsible for securing your own future. The truth is, every time we steal something, whether large or small, we are saying, I will be my own provider in this instance. It is an action not just against the person that we are stealing from. It is an action of doubt and distrust of God, and it is against him. We saw in our Sunday school lesson this morning how the people's rebellion was not against Moses and Aaron. You see, the physical actions we take, they may be against individuals, but ultimately they're against God. And the same is true in this case. When we steal, we're not just sinning against the person we steal from. Well, no one was hurt by it. God is hurt by it. It's against him. Ultimately, like the other commandments, this is a heart issue. Jesus said in Matthew 15:19, "For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and blasphemies." You see how many of the commandments are mixed in there? The Ten Commandments, the murders, the fornications and adulteries, the false witness, thefts. These are things that do what? They come from the heart. So the problem with the action is not just the action, it's the heart matter. So how do we deal with the heart? We do what Jesus repeatedly says. We've seen it in the Sermon on the Mount. We've seen it in Ephesians 4. What does he say in Ephesians 4? He says, "Put off the old man. Stop doing those things. Be renewed in the spirit of your mind by the word and by the work of the Spirit, and then put on the new man." And you'll see this repeated down through here. So what do we look at in this passage? How do we obey? What is the remedy for stealing? How do I obey this commandment? First of all, by having integrity. By having integrity, by having character, regardless of what you may hear, regardless of what may be demonstrated in our society, by even professing Christians, character still matters. Integrity matters. It seems to be an unpopular thing in our day. We call for character and integrity on the people we disagree with, but we overlook the lack of it in the people that we like and agree with. And that's all I'm going to say about that. "Let him that stole steal no more." We come down to the last part of this, and this verse gives us, how do I obey it? We do it with integrity. "Let him that stole steal no more." You admit it as sin, you confess it to God, and you stop doing it. You quit making justifications for it. But then we obey this commandment by industry, by our labor. You see, a lot of people will obey the first part. "Let him that stole steal no more." Stop stealing. Okay, I'm not stealing. I'm obeying that negative part of what not to do. But God takes it further. But he says, don't just quit stealing, but he says, "Let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good." We are to, as we are able, obviously there are some who are not able to do certain types of labor, and there are different types of labor. There is labor that's physically tiring. There's labor that's mentally tiring. There's labor that's emotionally tiring. And if you're a mother, it's all three. There's different types of labor, and some are able to do more than others. But we are to do what we are capable and able to do. It is just as much a part of this command for us to work and labor as it is for us to not steal. And why is that? Because we're not to take from others what they have earned. We are to earn for ourselves and do for ourselves. Proverbs 14:23 says, "In all labor there is profit." 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, "If you don't work, you don't eat." It's as simple as that. An old preacher one time I heard, he said, some of you got young'uns that lay around the house and don't want to do anything, and they want to eat your groceries, and they want to use your utilities, and he says, they never want to work and they never want to do anything. He says, the next time they come to the table, you just break their plate. That's that verse. If any would not work, neither should he eat. So our command is, we are to labor to provide for our families and for ourselves. But then we provide not just for ourselves, but for our families. 1 Timothy 5:8, "If any provide not for his own, especially those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." It's our task to provide for those that we are responsible for. So we labor in order to do that, so that we don't have a need that we feel like we have to steal for. We can trust God. Now, when he said trust God, he didn't just say sit back and do nothing, but we labor, doing the labor we are able, and then trusting God to meet our needs. He is our provider. He is the one that gives us what is required. Never seen the righteous forsaken or their seed begging bread. But then we do it a third way. This commandment's not finished. You see the commandment of grace? Don't steal. Labor. And why do we labor? We labor working with our hands the thing that is good, so that we may have to give to him that needs. The opposite of stealing is not simply not stealing. Now it's good. Quit stealing. Let him that stole steal no more. It's good to labor. But I know some people that would never steal. They're as honest as the day is long. They've got integrity out their ears, and they would never steal from anybody. And they'll work hard from dawn to dusk to provide for themselves and their family. But there, when it comes to helping somebody else, boy, they're as tight as can be. That's not obeying this command, is it? He said, don't steal, part one of the command. Labor as you're able to labor, part two of the command, so that you're able to give to the people that have needs. Now, as soon as you start talking about people that have needs, immediately I hear constantly the excuses. Well, what about this person who's just really scamming the system? There's a lot of people. Are there people who are scamming the system? Yes. Much like the 40-year-old Vietnam veteran that I passed on a street corner just a few years ago. You do the math and you'll figure out what I'm talking about. Do I know that he was lying? Yes. Does that not mean that there's not other people around me that have legitimate needs that I can help with? There's still people, there are plenty of, for every person who is scamming the system, there are many people who have legitimate needs. So I'll never use the excuse of the person who is doing wrong to keep me from doing what is right. And that's what grace is. Grace is, it's not just, the opposite of stealing is, It's not taking from others what you have not earned. It's giving to others what you have earned. And that's exactly what grace is. For God so loved the world that he just didn't kill us all. It's not what that verse says, is it? It's not just that he holds back. It's what he does in grace. For God so loved the world that he, what? Say it with me. Gave. He gave. He didn't give us what we did deserve. He gave us. He's the only one who deserves to be given anything when it comes down to it. And yet he's the one that gave. He gave to us. So when we reach this point of generosity, when we obey this command to the point of doing for others and helping others, who are we acting like? We're acting like God. We're looking like our Heavenly Father. We are expressing the kind of grace that he has bestowed on us, and it's not truly grace until there's giving involved. And that's what God calls us to. And I want you to know this morning that if you've never trusted Christ as your Savior, the greatest gift that's ever been given is the gift of salvation through Jesus Christ. And you can receive that gift this morning. That's the act of grace that God gives. It's not taking from others what you have not earned. It is giving to others what you have earned. That's the obedience. There's a great story a writer tells about an old man that would come to his back door, and he would sell vegetables out of his basket, small basket. The man at first was a little bit scared because he thought the man maybe was on drugs or he'd been drinking. His eyes were glazed over and he was sort of almost seemed incoherent. And so he would, out of both fear and pity, he would buy some vegetables from the man. But as he got to know him, he found out more about him. He found out that the man lived just a few houses down the street a little ways in just a small shack. He found out that his eyes were glazed over not because of alcohol, but because of cataracts and physical issues. He noticed that the man always wore mismatched clothes and his shoes didn't match. And sometimes he would show up and he said they would start having conversations about the gospel and about Jesus. One day the man reached in his pocket and he pulled out a harmonica and he started playing. He said, we would play and sing hymns together and gospel songs. And one day he said, I found a big bag of clothes and shoes, and he said, I gave them to this man thinking, I want to try to help him. He said, tears started flowing out of those blurry eyes. And he said, oh, he was so excited. He said, this is wonderful. He said, this full bag of shoes and clothes. He said, but you know what's even more wonderful? He said, yesterday I met some people who could really use these. That's the heart of generosity. It has nothing to do with what's in your bank account. It has to do with what's in your heart. Just last night I was reading this account. A Jewish lady who was in the concentration camps as a young child. Told about another young girl, her friend, that was in the camp together with her. One day that young girl, that her friend, somewhere came across one raspberry. She put it in her pocket. And she kept it in that pocket till that evening, and she pulled it out and she gave it. She said, "You're my friend. I want you to have this." And the lady commented on living in a moment when a treasure was one small berry, but also the treasure of a heart of giving that said, "I want you to have this. I want to give this." That's the fulfillment of what Jesus said when he said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive." If anybody but Jesus said that, we'd look at them like they were crazy because we like to all receive. Jesus says it's more blessed to give than to receive. John Wesley said, "Make all you can, save all you can, give all you can." When we get down to it, the bottom line is, it's about faith. So let's put aside for a moment your generosity or your stealing. Those are peripheral things. Those are surface things. And let's get to the heart of the matter. Do you trust God to meet your needs? The situation you're in right now, think about the situation in which you feel the most needy. Maybe it's somebody that you care about, and your greatest need is to try to reach them, to speak truth to them. Maybe it's a financial need. Maybe it's a physical need. Maybe it's some other need. Whatever the situation is in your life, think about that for a moment and think about what you need. Are you trusting God to provide what you need? Not just finances, not just possessions, but emotionally and spiritually and physically providing what you need. That's what this commandment boils down to. Do I trust God? Am I satisfied with Jesus? Am I content? The writer of Hebrews puts it this way, and I'll close. Let your conversation be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he, Jesus, has said, "I will never leave you or forsake you," so that we may boldly say, "The Lord is my helper. The Lord is my provider." Will we trust him?